Previously on Moya, have you not tried to contact him at home? Your sergeant hasn't turned in for work for days, and yet here you sit, as if it's the most normal thing in the world. I do not need any pills, Doctor. I need answers, and I intend to get them. Do not play games with me, Professor. I saw the cutout from the newspaper in the diner. Did you, or did you not teach Robbie Milton?
And you would know all about regret, wouldn't you, Agent?
You won't find many that would volunteer to go in there.
It appears someone doesn't mind going in there. Don't these look like footprints to you? If it was dark on the path to the mill, once we entered the outskirts of the forest, it was positively obsidian. The darkness hugged the edges of the flashlight's beam with a threatening grip. Each step forward felt like walking slowly into a void. Alfred walked forwards with his usual confidence, just ahead of me, stepping gracefully over each shadow, weaving left and right through the thick underbrush. The canopy of the forest was so thick that the covering of snow on the floor had quickly dissipated, giving way instead to a dank, dark ground that glittered occasionally with a thick frost. Alfred, what are you following? There are no tracks anymore.
I'm not following anything, James. I don't know if we're on a path or what, but there's definitely a way of least resistance through here.
You say you've never been in here before?
Not for many years, James. When I was young, we used to mess about up here at times, but not since I left the Youth League, and that was long before your lifetime.
And you've never heard of anyone mention anything about the forest? Nobody goes in that you know of?
I've heard of a few stories, but you don't want me to repeat them right now, James.
Alfred fell silent, and I had no inkling to disregard his advice and press him on the stories he mentioned. As a grown man, I wasn't too proud to admit that the blackness of the forest was unsettling at best. A primal fear of the dark crept around behind me, following me with every step, an ever-present pressure pushing down on my shoulders. I gripped the flashlight tight in my right hand, and with my left fingered the rubberized grip of the taser that was tightly strapped to my wrist. I followed Alfred in silence. The ground began to slope gently upwards, and the foliage and underbrush grew heavier, seemingly with every step. I slipped on wet branches, greasy underfoot, and it took all of my concentration just to keep upright and the torchlight pointed forwards, allowing Alfred to lead the way. I had no idea where I was being led, but his confidence was the only shred of reassurance I could cling to, and so I pressed on, trying to keep thoughts of supernatural children's tales locked out of my mind. As we continued to climb, the splash of the torchlight gradually crept further away, and then with a sudden lurch forward cast off into the horizon, shattering across the distant tree branches, Alfred stopped.
Turn that off a minute, James, would ya? I think we're on the edge of a pit or something, but I can't see anything if you keep waving it about like that.
I turned the flashlight off, and immediately the entire forest disappeared into a darkness that was so total that even Alfred was no longer visible, despite standing just a few feet ahead of me. I put my hands out in front of me and took a couple of steps forwards, brushing up against thin, low-hanging branches and cold, wet foliage.
Can you see anything down there, James?
Alfred, I can't see anything up here.
Look, come over here.
I felt Alfred's hands grip my coat and pull me downwards and instinctively crouched onto the wet ground, the knees of my slacks instantly soaking up the frost and freezing the joints.
What is it, Alfred?
Was that really necessary? I strained my eyes in the darkness. Without the flashlight, it was as good as useless to try and make out any detailed shapes. But as moments passed and the wind snaked through the trees, singing its low-whistled tune, my eyes gradually accustomed, and large shapes became visible, soaking into the landscape ahead of me like ink on a sponge. We were indeed sitting perched on what appeared to be the rim of a small pit, and in the centre, a large square blackened structure sat, void of any life. What is it?
I think it might be an old military bunker. They used to be dotted around the fields a long time ago, but gradually they pulled most of them down and they repurposed them for building materials. When I was in the youth league, we'd cart the materials about sometimes.
So why are we crouching down and hiding, Alfred? I don't see any lights on down there and it doesn't look like there's any movement.
You forget we're here because you found those footprints. We should go back, James.
I think rather we should go and have a look. If people are using this building, or at least if they're passing by this building, someone needs to uncover exactly who and what they might be.
James.
Alfred's protestations were of little use. I'd come this far into the woods, and as I had said before, something sinister was going on in I-42. And I intended to find out exactly what it was. I stood low, bending over at the waist, knees bent, and began traversing down the steep bank to the centre of the pit. As I grew closer to the building, it came more into focus. A dark concrete square structure with a low, flat roof about 5 feet tall. The building itself looked to be set down a foot or so into the ground. And when I drew level with the building, I could see that its windows had been boarded up with thick planks like those on the mill. The only door was made from rotting wood, dark with the chill damp of numerous winters past. I strained to hear any movement, but from outside the building, a serene quiet fell into the pit. The only sound was the gentle rustle of the tops of the trees swaying lazily in the wind, brushing against one another casually above my head.
Alfred.
Nothing. I guessed he had stayed at the top of the bank, and frankly I didn't blame him. The structure looked sinister from above, but now I was down standing next to it, its desolate form felt entirely innate. Gripping my torch but keeping it switched off, I pushed at the cold wood of the door. My fingers slipped on the chilled residue of the damp air that clung to it. With a gentle push it swung lazily inwards, and I stepped inside to be greeted with another blanket of darkness. The ground was concrete and dusty, and as I walked, the soles of my shoes ground the dirt with a light crunch. The tight hallway led inward for a couple of metres before splitting left and right. Tentatively, I flicked the switch on the torch and shone it on the wall in front of me. Paint peeled from the walls, leaving spider-like scars across its surface. At the same time, I heard a muffled gasp coming from the end of the right corridor. I shone my light to the end to find another door, less rotten, shielded from the elements as it was inside the thick concrete walls of the bunker. I walked down the hallway slowly, listening again for any further noise, but heard nothing. I took a breath, straightened my back, and exhaled before pushing at the door. Holding the flashlight up at shoulder height, I shone it around the large square room. There was a plate with uneaten food, a small bowl of what looked to be water, and there, in the corner, hunched over and tied from wrist to ankle, sat Ashbridge, looking to be in a loose state of consciousness. I strode over quickly to his body, letting the door drop behind me, and when it rattled on the frame, I froze for a moment before gathering my senses and walked over to the sergeant, who peered up at the light of the torch, squinting and breathing heavily. His mouth was taped shut with parcel tape that wrapped fully around his head. "Sergeant, are you hurt? Who brought you here? Give me a moment." I dropped the toolkit on the floor and pulled out the sharpest looking sawtooth pick that I could find and began sawing at the tape by his ear, which tore easily. As I pulled the tape from his mouth, he let out a gasp, coughing and spluttering, and he hunched over and spat on the floor. The saliva soaked into the dust on the ground.
James.
What?
Did Lloyd reach you?
He did. It took him everything he had just to get down to the motel. He was making little sense by the time I found him. Was he up here with you?
They had us both, and Robbie before me. I told him about you, and we set about breaking free, but as soon as we got him out of his bindings, he walked away, leaving me behind. He was touched in the head. I could only hope he was able to get down to the motel by himself. James, you can't trust anyone. I was a bloody fool. Forget it for now, Ashbridge. Do you think you can stand?
He nodded his head weakly, and I took hold of him under his armpits, supporting him as he pushed himself to his feet with one hand on the wall. First of all, let's get you back to the motel. We'll figure things out from there. I'll call the ministry and get some backup out here.
James, it's everyone. You were right, and they've been playing me like a fool for years.
Just concentrate on staying on your feet for now. We'll have plenty of time to go through the particulars when we're back. I told Ashbridge this not in fear of his health, but rather I didn't think I wanted to hear what he had to say just yet. Not when there was a dark forest to traverse before we could emerge back to the safety of the streetlights and electrical hum of the motel. I focused on the thought of the motel room and felt a small comfort as we walked back down the hallway to the door of the bunker. As we reached the intersection, I noticed a small low rattling sound coming from the second corridor that had headed left from the entrance.
What is that?
I asked Ashbridge. He shook his head, eyes to the ground. The sound was almost like a dull, rhythmical breathing, but with a gentle rattle. I let go of Ashbridge and shone the torch on the door, approaching it with my head tilted down to the floor.
James.
It's fine, Ashbridge. Give me a second.
Oh, you won't be interested in that, James. That's Mother. I wouldn't get too close, James.
There was a white flash that bleached my vision, and the room shook as my eyes rattled in my skull, and the room turned sideways and faded from vision. The pain in the back of my head smothered my thoughts.
Sorry about that, James.
We lift ourselves up to Mother, present her with this gift. The God-man, the God-woman, the heavenly man, the heavenly woman, the heavenly child. As the clouds break, so too the heavens. Burn in the ashes and drink the life deep. In silence, speak to me.
I pulled myself slowly to my feet, a dull ache in the back of my head, and took in the countless hooded figures, all standing in rows facing the rear wall in the rear room of the mill. Behind the altar stood three more hooded figures, all of which stopped chanting. The central figure held his arms in the air and held his head to one side, staring back at me. I could not see the face below the hood, though when his voice rang out into the now silent room, I recognised it instantly.
James, we're pleased to have you with us tonight, though many of us had hoped it would be under better circumstances.
The room stirred in the heavy atmosphere, dim under the candlelight of the altar that illuminated the sergeant's body, hanging lifeless from chains that strapped his wrists to either side of the table, arms outstretched. His head lolled backwards and rested on the bowl in the middle of the macabre scene. The smell of cheap perfume streamed from incense that burned on either side, filling the air with a thick smoke that made breathing feel claustrophobic and stuffy. The voice of the doctor rang out, reverberating from the walls and shocking me to my senses.
What have you done to Ashbridge? The good sergeant here has taken a great step forward for us all, James. His death is something of a ministerial blunder, but it won't be for nothing. We came to suspect that he knew more about us than we realised. We assume that's why he contacted the ministry in the first place. We'd only planned to keep him locked up until we could find an acceptable way to keep him in line. And when we found the case file, though, it seemed the poor sergeant really never had a clue. It was too bad we found it just a few hours too late, and even less fortunate that his misguided sense of justice could not be pressured.
You speak of misguided justice after you kill the man without a thought.
Kill him, James? No, no, no! He's been saved! His blood will help I-42 to march onwards, whilst the ministry continues to turn a blind eye to the economic decline of the outer sectors. We will rise up. We will lead Moya to a truly glorious future, James, with the aid of the sergeant and others who are presented to Mother.
Mother?
Did you not meet her for yourself? Suppose Alfred acted a little too hastily. No, we are not simple murderers, James. Though he's a little older than her usual nourishment, I dare say she will be quite satisfied.
So, it was you all along. You cast them to this mother of yours once they've outlived their usefulness to you.
On the contrary, James. The sergeant here has never been useful to us outside of his ceaseless naivety. And Mark Breyer was always one of our order that gave us great pride. And with his ministry role, a stronger position. But Mother can be quite territorial, James. The fate of the Briar boy and his fiancée was unfortunate for us all. After they'd given their own child to Mother's needs, they pulled away from us. It really was a shame to see them lose their way like that. No, we overestimated the influence we held over him through his father, and the will of Mother can be strong. It's fortunate she doesn't roam outside of the forest. Less fortunate that she crossed paths with that pair. But then he really shouldn't have been trying to reach his father alone. Moya does not need for those who can't follow orders, so perhaps it worked out well in the long run, eh? And look who it brought us, James. You! One might even call it fate.
Fate? Is that what you call it? And what about Robbie Milton? Was his death fate too?
Another demonstration that the young do not understand, James. The spirit of Moya is lost on them. They are happy to take, but turn bitter and spiteful when it's their turn to give. Their deaths do not have to be in vain, however, James. Join us and be our first hand to grip inside the Big Five. With you in our ranks, we can take a significant leap forward in our march to a prosperous future under the guidance of Mother.
What makes you believe you'll guide anyone anywhere? I cast my eyes around the room, panicking, shouting at the hooded figures. Do you truly believe this man? Do you really believe you can have a future built on death? He takes your own flesh and blood from you, and for what? Nothing but the beating of a hollow drum.
They give what they can, and they give it gladly, James. They benefit everyone as a whole. Each of us all. We are the very spirit of Moya, James. Look around you. The commander's vision for Moya isn't working. It's time for us to follow a new leader, one with the power to lift us up and give us the strength of renewal to fight our enemies.
This man's words spoke of an entirely twisted vision. I was dumbfounded that anyone could listen to anything he said, let alone follow his wild plans. You've given these people nothing. Can't you see? He's given you nothing. You listen to his words, and where's it gotten you?
And is the commander any better, James? Do you feel any security? His family have failed Moya time and time again. Have you yourself not suffered under his stewardship?
I stopped and looked at the ground for a second. Arguing these people was an exercise in obscene futility. My heart beat in its chest so heavy that it shook my body, and my ears thumped with a dull ache from the blow on the back of my head. Adrenaline coursed through my body and my eyes darted from hooded figure to hooded figure, their long shadows casting out on the walls in the dim candlelight. At the far reach of the room, I could see that the window I had broken through the last time I was here had not been repaired, and with a last gasp of the thick-scented air, I dashed forwards, pushing bodies aside, and drove headlong for the clear night outside.
"Where are you going, James? We don't want to hurt you. We want you on our side, James. James!"
I fell headfirst out onto the snow-covered muddy floor of the clearing, my pants legs snagging on one of the protruding iron nails left jutting from the sill of the window. Before I'd even had time to feel the impact, I picked myself up and tore across to the gate that led to the path down to the housing district. In the distance, I could make out the orange glow of the streetlights, and they drove me forwards, skidding and slipping down the precarious icy slope. I was unsure if I was being followed, but I had no plan to stop and check. I pushed onwards, the lights growing more and more vivid at the bottom of the dark tunnel of trees on either side of me. At a horrific rattle coming from the tree lining, I whipped my head round in a startled fear that gripped my throat. My foot skidded across the damp tree root and I felt a sharp pain in my back, so my tailbone struck the floor hard. Laying dazed, I grasped my hands in the snow, searching for some purchase, and pushed myself up, sitting on the wet ground. The lights on the street were bright now. Snow had begun falling again, and the flakes drifted in the orange light, appearing out of the blackness above and floating to rest on the soft haze of the snow-covered ground as it reflected the light stretching out into the cold night. "Stand up, James. You're almost there. Where can I go? I need to get out of here. Where do you want to go, James?" "I want to go home." I felt a warm pressure around my wrist, pulling my arm, dragging me upwards. "Let's go home, James." Moya was created by Ben Cutmore. Intro and outro music is used under Creative Commons Attribution License and is called Russian Winter by Tim from tabletopaudio.com. You can help support the show by heading over to patreon.com/MoyaPodcast, and as thanks you gain access to a private Discord server as well as early access to episodes and all that other good stuff. Thanks for listening.